Good afternoon. I am Elizabeth Adam. I'm a second year Master's of Public Health student at Emory University. I'm going to speak to you all about the Clean Green Study, which is a project I've been working on for a little bit over a year now. And the aim of the project is to describe fecal contamination routes on produce at the farm level. And specifically, we're going to talk about lessons learned about study design, sampling, and testing techniques. I have no relationships to disclose. So here's an overview of what we're going to go through. First, we're going to start off with the project motivation. Then I'm going to give you some background into the Clean Green Study, followed by our past studies, the methods and results and lessons learned. Then our current study, our improved sampling frame and preliminary results, and finish up with some conclusions and next steps. So the Clean Green Study motivation. From 1998 to 2007, nearly 27,000 cases of illness were caused by consumption of contaminated produce. And this information was taken from the Center for Science and the Public Health Interest and is highlighted in the graph to the right. You can see produce is in the top three food commodities for causing outbreaks and causes one of the highest amounts of illnesses. Farms and packing sheds have been implicated in several outbreak investigations. A recent example of this is the cantaloupe and listeria outbreak, which was traced back to packing shed water. So although we know that produce is a high-risk product, because it is minimally processed, it's often not washed before it's eaten, and it's often eaten raw, we don't fully understand the contamination routes in the production environment. So to address this need, we developed the Clean Green Study. When I talk about the Clean Green Study, I'm talking about three studies in particular. Clean Greens 1 and Clean Greens 2 have already occurred and been published. And Clean Greens 3 is underway. We just finished our pilot year. So Clean Greens 1 and 2, over 7 years of research with a focus on the post-harvest production process, so the packing sheds, on U.S. side of the U.S.-Mexico border. These were two cross-sectional epidemiological field studies. And I'm going to speak a little bit about the results that we found in this. Currently, we're in the process of Clean Greens 3, which is a four-year USDA-funded study. We're focusing on identifying contamination routes at the farm level, so specifically at the field level, and we're going to evaluate interventions aimed at reducing fecal contamination on produce. Okay, so just to outline again where we are, now I'm going to move into our past studies. So as I mentioned before, Clean Greens 1 and 2, we had a focus on high-risk steps in the post-harvest production process, farms and packing sheds on the U.S. side of the U.S.-Mexico border. So we collected 923 samples of 14 types of leafy greens and produce and matched environmental samples. And I just want to highlight that this matching of the environmental samples occurred overall at the farm level rather than at the specific point where we took the produce item. So the matched samples were irrigation water, packing shed water, worker hand rinses, and equipment surface swabs. So our produce samplers were homogenized, so basically we put them in a stomacher and mushed them up and then took 25 grams of that as a sample and processed it by culture-based methods for a traditional fecal indicators, total aerobic bacteria, total coliforms, generic E. coli, and enterococcus. And basically these are just indicators of fecal contamination. They don't necessarily mean that you will get sick if you come in contact with them. They're just an indicator of feces. And our limit of detection for our produce was 10 colony-forming units per gram of produce, and for water, 1 colony-forming unit per 100 milliliters of water tested. So this is just a snapshot of our results, and if you'd like more information on this, I have the citation at the bottom. But basically, we made a mathematical model to determine whether or not E. coli was present on produce based on certain risk factors. So the outcome was binary, yes or no E. coli presence. And we found that location, specifically packing shed, crop, cabbage and cantaloupe were high-risk crops. Origin American was a high risk, and season fall was a risk factor. So these were all of our risk factors that we found from Clean Greens 1 and Clean Greens 2. And as I mentioned before, this is just a quick snapshot. We have several papers that we have published on this. But I'd like to focus our talk on challenges from this study and then our proposed solutions in our new sampling frame, which we hope will address these. So one challenge we had was that we had a difficult time linking our environmental exposures to produce contamination. And we felt that one potential way to do this, help address this, would be to match our environmental samples, so our worker hand rinses and our irrigation water or our soil samples or our source water, to our produce at the field level, so at the specific point where we're taking our produce samples. And then the same thing with the worker hands. If we take a sample before someone has touched it and then take it after somebody has touched it, then we can kind of create a sort of timeline and get at causality as far as what's going on there. The next challenge we found was that contamination is too focal, oftentimes, to be identified at the farm level. And what I mean by that is if you look at a field, the probability of finding feces on, say, if you take a random sample of 25 cantaloupe out of 200-something cantaloupe, it's probably pretty low. So you have to be strategic in the way that you go about sampling. And we tried to develop a sort of strategy to get around these things. So a part of the strategy involved taking produce rinses rather than taking 25 grams of produce and mashing it up and processing it in order to increase our field coverage and then the surface area of the produce tested per sample. And then we also increased our variety of bacterial and viral indicators and pathogens that we tested for. Okay, so now I'm going to move on to our current study and describe the sampling frame a little bit more and show you some of our preliminary results, which do suggest that it may be a better method than what we were using before. So in addition to our scientific objectives, as I mentioned, we wanted to improve our methods to identify, quantify, and prevent fecal contamination of produce at the farm level. So here's our improved sampling frame. All wrapped up. We have four sampling points. Two are in the field and two are at distribution. These two at the field in ground and the field at harvest, occur at the same physical location or a similar physical location. The difference between these two is the field in ground, we take a produce sample before any worker has handled the produce. And we match these to source water and irrigation water samples and soil water samples. Then, after the worker has handled the produce, we take another produce sample and then try to match these to the worker's hand rinse. The next two are distribution. Oftentimes, this is an either-or situation. If it's a situation in which the produce is put onto a truck, a lot of times farms cannot trace where their produce goes to once it leaves their farm. So at that point, we've decided that's the end of the road for us. We're going to take a sample there, and we're going to take a worker hand rinse. If there is the case where we can trace it all the way to the packing shed, then we're going to take a sample from the packing shed as well, in addition to a worker hand rinse. So this way, when we're analyzing, we hope to be able to analyze horizontally across and look at, as we move down, what we call a production chain, and also within each of these sampling points. So just to reiterate this increased field coverage that we think we're finding, we're having random selection of our sampling locations within our fields. So we're taking one random location, two, three, compositing it, and then we have a produce rinse. It has 54 tomatoes or 42 jalapenos or 6 cantaloupes. And these seem like really random numbers, but they're actually approximately equivalent as far as surface area goes. So that's how we came up with those numbers. And we also came up with them by back calculating what we wanted our limits of detection to be. So although we cannot look at in-field variability here because we're taking things at different locations, we can increase our coverage of the field. We're also testing for a wide variety of fecal indicators and pathogens. Total coliforms, Enterococcus, and generic E. coli are bacterial indicators. DNA polyphage is our viral indicator. E. coli 0157H7 Salmonella are bacterial pathogens. We're also testing for norovirus as our viral pathogen. And microbial source tracking is something that has novel use in food safety. The 16S bacterial dailies are DNA is highly conserved segment within species, so it allows us to distinguish between feces that originates from a human, originates from a bird, or originates from a cow. I believe this will be very important when we come down to designing our interventions. We want to be really smart about it and cost effective. So this is just a quick study comparison. I just want to add a disclaimer here because the previous study is a completed study. It's been published. You can see the sample sizes are much larger. Current study is just pilot data information. We're just getting in our information, but it does appear that we are catching a lot more contamination than we did in the previous study. So originally our limit of detection for all our produce was at 10 colony forming units per gram. Currently it's less than 0.02 colony forming units per gram. Before we had 16% of produce samples above the limit of detection, now we've seen 35% just in our pilot testing. And then with cantaloupe specifically, I mentioned earlier that as an example, because of the recent outbreak, we were seeing 25% in the previous study, now we're seeing 56% having E. coli present above our limit of detection. Okay, I'm just going to finish up with conclusions and next steps. So in conclusion, there are many challenges that face epidemiologists who would like to do a prospective or cross-sectional food safety study. One being that there are many potential mechanisms or pathways for contamination. We believe that matching our environmental samples at the sampling point is going to help this. Also, the fact that contamination is often too focal to be identified, we believe that we can increase our coverage of the field using our produce rinses, and we can concentrate these rinses and lower our limits of detection. Same thing with our hand rinses. If we look at before the person is touched versus after the person is touched, we can kind of get at causality there. And the last thing is that knowledge of the source of fecal contamination is important for designing effective and sustainable interventions. And that's something that really is the driving factor of this study. We want to make sure we can pinpoint where things are coming from. And next steps, we just want to finish up. We've just finished our pilot year and collected 238 samples. We're still collecting as we speak. We're doing our recovery rate calculations for internal lab validity. We're doing some statistical methods development. And once we finish this, we will try to implement our interventions, monitor and evaluate them, and then communicate our findings. And I'd like to acknowledge everyone on our team, our PIs are Norma Heredia, Santos Garcia from the University of Nuevo León, Leon Jacobs from the University of North Carolina State University, and Juan León from Emory University, and of course the USDA, who is funding this project. Okay, thank you.